Hello and welcome to another episode of But Why, the podcast that's all about digging into big questions and tricky topics via honest conversations. This week we're going to be looking at loneliness, which actually, as I've been mulling it over the last couple of days, I've found a very triggering subject to sit with, so this makes for a good conversation. And I am joined by a friend of the podcast, I've never said that before, but I think you can be it, and friend of mine and someone who I personally take a lot of wisdom from. It's Anna Martha, I ask you this every time.
Anna Martha's good. I mean, no one, unless, because it's an Indian surname, I don't say it right, my husband doesn't say it
give
right. Otherwise, you
crack of how you would say.
I say Martha.
But what? Oh,
my husband says Martha, but I think it's more Matur.
Okay.
In an Indian accent.
But this makes me feel a bit.
Which
makes
me
feel a bit better about stumbling about it, because I think I've always wanted to say Mather, but that also isn't right.
Yeah. I mean. Yeah.
Definitely not. Yeah. If it's of Indian heritage. Anyway, you've said it, so we'll go with that. She is a mum of three, a psychotherapist, and a best-selling author. I mean, this woman knocks out books almost faster than you knocked out children, actually. She's passionate about talking about therapy outside of the therapy room and sharing her own personal and professional experiences to support mums through motherhood. Her own podcast, A Therapy Edit, has over 250,000 downloads. I feel like that stat is a bit out of date.
It's a million now, yeah. Over a million,
you need
yeah.
need people to update your bio.
I do. We need to change that. That PDF.
You can tell I'm a super fan that I know that. And her new book, The Little Book of Calm for Mums, is out now. So three important questions, Anna. How are you really? What star sign? And favourite crisps?
You know, I was thinking this morning, I was really excited about these questions because I love hearing people's answers. So how am I really? I feel really heightened. I think I'm hormonal. I checked my app this morning. And that always just, I think, just kind of heightens emotions.
So as in your premenstrual?
Yeah. So I think I'm feeling things more, a bit more sensitive. So that will bring probably an extra layer of honesty and emotion to our chat. Tired because we had friends around last night. I'm trying so hard to do that thing. You know when you keep saying to people, "Oh yeah, we'll get together." Mm-hmm. So I'm starting to be really intentional. So I whip out my phone and I'm like, "Right, let's when." Because
well
the people we had around last night, we've been honestly saying that for about 5 years.
Mm.
So we walked past them the other day and we got our phones out and we put something in the diary
and got it done,
which kind of, ugh. You know, that this will come up in the topic that we're chatting about. So I'm really, I loved having that company last night. What was the next question? The crisps?
Oh, my crisps.
So it changes because I go all out on one crisp and then I get sick of them. So for ages, it was the maple syrup and bacon.
Oh,
honestly,
naughty.
I would eat no other crisp and now I can't look at them. So now it's prawn cocktail.
But you know, I think I'm right in saying, and I hope this is not just a personal conversation, you're thinking that you might have ADHD and you know that hyperfixation on food is quite a common trait of that.
I definitely see that in myself. And when I look back, oh, do you know those bars with the dried fruit?
Oh, yeah, they make
gosh, what are they called?
No, naked bars.
Bars. Oh, my gosh. Shudder. At one point, I kept buying them as if they were going to stop selling them. I can't look at those now either.
Yeah, it's so weird. And you also don't really see when the end of that hyperfixation is coming because you're like, oh, I love it. Oh, no, I'm not eating that ever again.
Yeah. I put carrot and coriander soup, I can barely say it, in the microwave once at work. And in the 3 minutes it took to heat up, I was off it. I was like, I cannot even, and never since then, carrot and coriander soup is not my soup. And my star sign is Virgo.
We discussed this, which I think
makes sense, doesn't it?
Well, I'm thinking with the food, because you know the young people talk about getting the ick for other humans, which I definitely relate to. You're like, oh, I really like you. Oh no, there's something's just changed and you're now giving me the ick. But food really doesn't do anything. That's completely in your own mind, isn't it? The coriander didn't taste any different that day.
But it was this sudden aversion, almost like in pregnancy, where you can't even talk or think about that food.
And I wonder whether it's because it's kind of linked, because actually, funnily, you say that for me, it's definitely linked to kind of the naked bars have linked to kind of pregnancy. Yeah, or different chapters of your life. Like, that is what I ate during that phase and that's not me anymore. Therefore, I can no longer obsessively eat the same thing.
Yeah.
But it's nice when you discover a new obsession and you're like, this is great.
Yeah, because it brings so much joy. I wonder when the prawn cocktail crisps are going to be out, because my kids really like them. So, yeah.
Yeah.
I'll have to, you know, I can't overdo it. Otherwise, they'll be sad when I refuse to buy them.
when you can no longer have them. I think it's quite good to have split tastes from your kids and things like that, because then it's very clear what are yours and what aren't.
Skips, not into those.
So on.
They can keep the skips. Mm.
I like them, but you'd have to eat like five bags before you had any kind of sense of satisfaction. Yeah.
Flavoured air.
So we're going to be talking about loneliness. And as I said in my intro, the more I've mulled this, and I know you've been mulling it in terms of the work that you're doing, it leaves me with a really deep sense of sadness as I think about it. And I was trying to unpick why that is. It's a couple of things. I think there's a bit of shame around loneliness. And then the flip of that is a bit of guilt that's particularly... it's quite a cliche, but I think of my granny, and I hope that he's no longer with us, but I hope that, you know, the older people in my life don't, anyone in my life doesn't feel lonely, because I wouldn't like that. When you think of loneliness, what springs to mind, or how does it make you feel?
Yeah, I think that same thing, that sadness. And actually my brain suddenly hopped back to my psychotherapy training, and we did some existential training, which is kind of like when they talk about the human givens, you know, the facts of life that are true for everyone. You know, we will die, everything comes to an end. And one of them, I found it very, very depressing. So I think these truths are often the ones that we try and numb or try and ignore, because they're sad, they're hard to think about. And one of them was that we're alone. You know, ultimately... Mm-hmm. You are one person, and no matter what relationships you have and what depths of connection you have, you are one person in this world. Mm. You are an individual person in this world. And I just found that so painful to think about. Mm. And I think when we feel lonely, we're really getting in touch with that, you know, one of those core things of being human is that relationships are so important to us, and we have to put a lot of, you know, often a lot of time and energy and investment into them. But ultimately, the core of it is that no one can be everything to us. No one can, you know, I don't know, fulfill everything, you know, fulfill that desire and that need to feel connected.
And there's definitely a kind of moment in your childhood when you begin to become aware of that. My kids are definitely at the phase now where they're saying, I don't want you to ever die, mummy. And because you have that sudden understanding that can't be the case. And I don't know how comfortable you are talking about it, but you had the loss of your sister really early. Mm. And I think there's definitely a sibling idea that I feel innately that my siblings will be by my side forever. But that isn't the truth.
No, and I remember so starkly thinking, so my sister got diagnosed with cancer when I must have been about, I'm trying to think, she was 2, 3, 4, 5. I must have been about 6, wow. So 6, 7. So I was the age my oldest is now. And I remember thinking, if she were ever to die, I wouldn't be able to live. Mm. You know, it was that fear of being left. It was that fear of, I guess, that shift and that awareness that nobody can be there forever. And I used to want my parents to promise me, I had this desperate desire for them to promise me that they wouldn't die.
Mm.
And I think, again, it comes down to that, I don't want to be alone from you.
It's difficult, isn't it? Because the older I get now, I'm more comfortable in my own company, and I'm actually more crave my own company than I ever have. I've just watched Everything I Know About Love. Have you watched it, Dolly Alden?
No, I haven't, but it's on my
wish list. It's really brilliant. And there's a real scene where the protagonist, all her friends are out for the evening and she's left in the house on her own. And I remember it. And in your 20s, you literally do not know what to do in a building on your own. She just like knocks around the house she can't like sit on the sofa, she can't do that, she can't be on her own, which I definitely can now. But that doesn't mean that you there's such a difference between being alone and loneliness, isn't there?
Yeah, and solitude and isolation as well. So as I was thinking about this the other day, and I was writing something about it, you know, there's differences between all of these things, and there's difference between being alone and being lonely. We don't always feel lonely when we're alone.
No.
And there's a difference between solitude and isolation. I think for me, solitude is sometimes the thing that I seek. Mm. I know it's going to be good for me and it's something I crave. Isolation is more a separation that's kind of enforced, or, you know, you feel isolated because of a circumstance, or you feel disconnected from the people around you. So I think it's really interesting to kind of ponder what those mean, but they're all a disconnection. You know, it's whether it's choice or disconnection from people, and sometimes from yourself. Like, I think sometimes the loneliness when we're alone is that disconnection from ourselves.
Yes. And actually, you don't want to be alone because you don't want to try and lean into that discomfort. Because actually, when you are left alone, you have to face some realities. Your mind is left to wander, and it might bring up some uncomfortable truths. But it's so true about the disconnection, because I was trying to think of moments when I felt lonely. And I remember very specifically, I was the first of my friends to have a baby and the first of my siblings. So yeah, first of anyone I really knew to have a baby. And I went out a year afterwards with my friends. And I just remember thinking, you don't know what I'm going through, and I no longer am in the world that you're in. And we're all here and we're having a nice time at a nice restaurant, but I feel really lonely because we no longer have a shared kind of understanding of one another.
Yeah, it's that disconnection, isn't it? And I think it's that feeling of being unseen. And, you know, some of my loneliest moments in parenting are when I'm standing in the kitchen and it is flipping hard and I'm trying to contain all of the different emotions and I'm trying so hard not to shout. And I feel like in that moment, I feel like no one understands what this feels like. There's no one here to recognize me. There's no one here to say, Anna, that looks really hard, or I know what that feels like. And we can feel really lonely even though we're not alone in our feelings. And sometimes I have to literally remind myself of that. Is, you know, I've one of my kids is neurodivergent, so we have a lot of challenges around kind of explosive emotions, and therefore I'm having to contain those emotions and my own response to them, because sometimes I just want to have my own tantrum and I just want to scream. And that is, you know, I think that's one of the hardest things in parenting, is when you're, you know, everything in you wants to run away from the storm, but as mums we're called to walk towards it, to walk towards and to stay in the eye of the storm. And I find sometimes that is one of the loneliest feelings, when I'm at home and I'm not on my own, because I'm with the kids, but you know, I want someone to mother me. I want someone to parent and affirm and encourage and support me. And there isn't anyone, and there's no one to see me in that moment and see how hard it is. And that's why I think parenting can feel really lonely, you know, beyond the support networks that we have, beyond the number of people that we have around us or the number of friends that we have. There are those moments where you feel disconnected from others.
Especially for me, and I'm sure you relate, but in the first 6 months of motherhood, it was unbelievably lonely. And it's that contrast, isn't it, from having the life that you had and then these blank days with nothing. And the problem is also, because your brain is pretty fried at that point, you then do meet people and it's your first ever experience of those half conversations, which you become more, they become more normal and you accept them now. But you know, the one thing you've got in your diary is to go for coffee with these other mums, and you go there and no one is able to have a conversation or see one another, and then you leave feeling even more lonely. It's really tough.
And I think that's it goes back to what I was saying at the beginning about trying to be more intentional about seeing people. Because the other day I did a school run and it was fine, and I saw loads of people and I smiled at loads of people, and I sat in the car afterwards and I was feeling something like a sadness. And what I like to do is name feelings to see which one fits. And I, you know, like trying on clothes in a shop, and I'll just say, am I feeling angry, bored, lonely, in a way that I do to my kids sometimes when I'm trying to get to the bottom of what is going on in them. And I just said lonely, and it was like a punch in the stomach, and it was like this real kind of deep resonance of, wow, that's how I'm feeling. And I felt like crying, and I thought, okay, I've seen so many people. I've said hi to friends, people that genuinely care about me and who would listen to me and who I could have spoken to. But when was the last time I actually had more than a passing conversation, or, you know, chatting in the park where you're then dragged away because someone wants to go on the swing and Florence likes being pushed a lot. And I think in that moment, I decided that I needed more connection. Mm-hmm. You know, I think we have so many connections with people more than ever, but it's like we're spread really thinly, and as humans we're wired mm-hmm. for connection and vulnerability, and I think we've gotten out of the habit. Again, I looked at the dinner table, you know, this table in our kitchen is really, we bought it when we first bought a house in 2014, and we bought this big wooden table, and our dream and our desire was to host people, have people around it, and kind of create community. And I looked at this table one Saturday evening, I felt really sad because we hadn't had people mm. over for a long mm. time. You know, on a Saturday night, we'd have said to friends, just come around, let's play a board game. Like, you know, super relaxed. And I felt really sad. And I said to my husband, I said, we've gotten out of the habit mm. of being with people. Mm. So we started putting some dates in the diary. It's good.
But it's like this hangover from lockdown where actually, when you're talking about a connection, I do remember that time when the weird journey of it, but when you were allowed to meet people for a walk, and actually, though we weren't seeing people very much, I'd then meet my best mates and would walk for a couple of hours and I'd have like such a brilliant, brilliant, like wholesome chat. And now we're at this weird thing where we can see one another. We're out of the habit of inviting people over because probably we think that, you know, we can't. But we're also not getting those moments like those precious walks. And it's so true. And it's funny because I think there is a very collective sense of being a bit exhausted. And maybe this is it. And this is the cycle, isn't it? You feel exhausted and you think, I haven't got the capacity to see anyone. And you pull back and pull back and pull back. And suddenly you haven't seen people for a long time. And yeah. and then seeing them is hard because you've got a lot to catch up on. And it's easy to, to skip it.
And social anxiety as well. You know, I think so many people are experiencing that haven't experienced it before. And it's just that our comfort zones got so incredibly small mm. that even, you know, some of those steps outside of them feel quite big. And I was listening to a talk the other day and someone was talking about how they were talking about the story of this bird in a cage, and it was this amazing bird, and they were going to free it, and they had this big ceremony, and they opened the door of this cage, and the bird stayed in the cage. And he said, it was so profound, he was like, it wasn't that the bird was in the cage, it was that the cage was in the bird.
Wow.
I know. And I think, you know, relating this to loneliness is that it's like, I think many of us have kind of like embodied this disconnection mm. and we don't have, there is more for us mm. there is more, you know, there are people that we have friendships with and relationships with that actually we can lean on those a little bit more than perhaps we've been in the habit of doing. So we can be a bit more vulnerable than perhaps we, you know, maybe we've lost our confidence in doing so. And it's mm. I think some of these things are there for us, it's just that it's like the cage mm. is inside of us.
Yeah, and I think actually at the beginning I said, oh, when I think of loneliness, I get this sense of guilt. And that is an important thing to remember. If I feel heartbroken that anyone who I, you know, in my core would ever feel lonely, I hope that there's the equivalent there for me. But I think we need to, remember that we can lean into that. But something I also observed in myself, that when I'm doing the equivalent of what you talked about in the kitchen, of when it's all crashing around you, I can sometimes ladder towards resentment and to feeling angry that people aren't seeing me and the narrative of why aren't I being helped. And that's becomes a terrible thing because you put the barriers up and you make yourself even more difficult to connect with, I guess.
I think it's the both, isn't it? You know, there was one morning and I called up my husband and actually it was so hard. And he was leaving at 7 a.m. and he'd just seen the kids, you know, it was hard already at that point in the morning. And I stood on the doorstep and I cried as he left. I saw him go down the road and I cried and I thought, you're leaving me. And I called him later on the phone and it was just awful. And I'd snapped at the kids and I was just shouting down the phone at him that I hated him. And later on he was like, that was so hurtful. And I said, yes, but in that moment, I think there needs to be, sometimes we need to be able to separate out for ourselves the acceptance of the situation, that I accept that he has to go to work. I respect that. and I accept that. But also sometimes I resent that, and that is incredibly hard, and I feel very alone. And I think it's reminding yourself, and sometimes having that conversation maybe with that significant other or whoever else it is in your life, in which you sometimes experience that dichotomy where the circumstances are right and they're important and you respect them and you accept them, but in that moment it has an impact. And I think it's okay to feel that resentment and to acknowledge that, whilst also know that beside that is that acceptance that is how it is. And actually you wouldn't want to change that. You wouldn't want to ask for that to be changed. And I think this is often where the guilt comes in, is when the one thing feels at war with the other, as if you can't find something hard whilst also accepting that it is how it is. And yes, yeah, sometimes it is lonely. And that has to be okay.
And actually the size of that those feelings, and it's hard, isn't it? It's really hard. And it's lonely to have all of that going on in your head. But I so know what you mean. And actually it's usually particularly when I'm premenstrual, which I don't apologize for, but it's when suddenly the sum of the parts and the size of the things that you're holding together feels undoable. And I know that I can do it, and I will do it, and we chose to do it, and it was all the right decisions. It doesn't mean in that moment on that doorstep you don't want to have a massive weep about it. And I think that is the crux of what these relationships have to be, to allow me to be that most difficult version of myself, or what I don't know what the right language is, and hopefully not take it personally.
Yeah, and I think it is just constant. It's thinking, what is the foundation of that experience? The foundation of that experience is that this is the circumstance. You wouldn't change it. You accept it and you respect it. But then there are other feelings that sit on top of that sometimes, and they change. You know, sometimes there is absolute joy and privilege, and that is the focus, and that is the main feeling. And sometimes there is loneliness and maybe resentment and I think it's that recognition and that being able to verbalize that the foundational feelings are, they are good and they are acceptance and they are respect. But what is on top of them needs to be able to change. And you need to be able to verbalize it. Because I think that's also where that guilt comes in around loneliness, is that, if I love these people and I'm grateful for them and I recognize the privilege of having them in my life, then I shouldn't feel lonely, or I shouldn't. And then, we start shaming ourselves for what is just, it's a feeling, and it's a human response to that circumstance, and it will change and it will. But I think when we stop shaming ourselves for emotions, it enables us then to respond to them in a way that is respectful of them. So I notice my loneliness, or I notice that feeling of resentment, and I think, okay, I'm not going to shame myself for it, because then I'll be stuck in it. What do I need? Actually, I need to, to ask people around me to facilitate me going out for a walk with a friend and having that time of real connection, because that's the antidote to loneliness. It's connection and vulnerability.
Yeah, and I think you're the queen of celebrating that. When I'm in those kind of more crisis-y moments in my mind, I'm very prone to going to extreme. So it's like, I've got no friends, nobody cares about me, I never go out. And actually the truth is I have got friends, and I don't need a week. I mean, a week in Ibiza would be lovely, but what I actually need is probably like a couple of hours with a coffee and a walk, and it's so much more attainable. And it's a real classic, don't throw the baby out with the bathwater. You don't need to change your whole life just because you're feeling a bit rubbish one day.
Yeah, and I think for you, in that moment, it's noting the foundation. What is the truth of this situation? The truth is that you are known and you are loved and you have people that care about you. So that's the foundation. And then the feeling upon that is that you feel alone, you feel disconnected, and you're craving company, and you just want to feel, you want to be in the company of people that accept you. And the two can both exist. So when you don't shame yourself for feeling that, then you're more likely then to kind of to seek that coffee and seek that conversation.
There's definitely something that I've been thinking when you've been talking as well. The fundamentals of why I started Mother of All Lists was because in my most challenging moments, whether that's be financial challenges, relationship challenges, career challenges, mental health challenges, there was always this layer of feeling weird and feeling alone with it. And actually, that just sends you further into your place, doesn't it? You just need to know that someone else, as you said earlier, someone else, even the most weird and unusual parts of our life, someone else has experienced the equivalent, haven't they?
Oh, absolutely. And I think it's, you know, it's that empathy of, you might not know exactly what it feels like to be in that situation, but you know what it feels like to feel lonely. You know what it feels like to feel frustrated or overwhelmed or resentful. And funnily enough, the other day, I'd had a really hard morning. Our mornings are often really challenging, full of a lot of crying and screaming and shouting and hitting, and not me, although sometimes there definitely are tears on my side as well. And I went to school and I had my big sunglasses on, and a friend, she said to me, "Are you okay?" And I just burst into tears because I just, you know, I wasn't, and it was just so lovely because I felt so seen in that moment. And, you know, I was like, "I'm really sorry." She said, "Don't worry, it'll be me next week." And you know what? It was the same thing happened the other way around. And then again, another friend, as she was getting out of the car, I said, "Are you okay? You know, it's so sunny today. Are you okay?" She said, and she started crying. And then she was so apologetic. And I said, "Don't worry, it'll be me next week." And it may well be. And I think it's, you know, it's in those moments of vulnerability where we can feel that connection and people can be there, and they can't fix it and they can't change it, but they can recognize us and they can see us. And I think it's a shame when we wait for those moments where it all spills out and falls over, that we allow those moments to happen. I think the most nurturing and nourishing kind thing is to seek those moments when they don't feel so urgent.
Yeah, when it's not reached that point. And also, I think what you're talking about, I've got a friend who we, you know, our lives are very closely aligned, and so often she'll text me afterwards and be like, "Oh, I'm so sorry for bending your ear." And I've never walked away from that interaction feeling like that. And we have to try, in the same way with our relationship with leaving work early, and not apologize. Don't apologize. Like, I think the framing, if you want to acknowledge it, is to say thank you for listening, but don't apologize for being a person going through stuff. And again, that's a message to myself, because I never feel that about being there for my friends. I feel honored that they're being the most vulnerable version of themselves with me.
Yes. And this is what deepens connection. So if the antidote to loneliness is connection, you know, vulnerability is what connects us together. So as we allow ourselves to be open with each other, we give that sense of privilege to that person. You know, it is often, isn't it? It's that deep privilege that you were able to be there for that person, and you could hear them and you could see them, and that made a difference. And yeah, you know, this is how our relationships become deeper and richer.
And there's so many layers to this as well, because I'm thinking again with a similar friendship group. I remember going round to someone's house and they're like, "You know what, should we just all turn up in our joggers and get a takeaway?" And that once upon a time, that could be, I haven't cooked, we aren't dressing up, I'm making an effort. But actually, you have the best time because you're inviting everybody to show up as a version of themselves. And I know that you have relationships with people close by who you do that kind of very early morning walk with sometimes. And actually not putting those layers that stand in the way of connection, that make it harder to get to, that you don't have to put a good outfit on or have the right things. Let's just do it now. It's so much better, isn't it?
Yeah, I remember. So the difference between having my first baby and my third baby, of which my second baby was the catalyst of this. So my first one was very much, I was out in Sainsbury's the morning after giving birth. And with makeup on, in fact, I left the hospital looking like the last few hours hadn't even happened. And I remember going around Sainsbury's and thinking, and saying to my husband, "I need to go and sit in the car because I think everything's going to," like, I felt like everything was going to fall out of me. And I went and sat in the car because I realized physically I couldn't do that. And then I had my middle child and went through the real fire of undiagnosed silent reflux. It just really stripped me back in the most painful and incredible way. And then, so that was very much just a survival time. But then Florence, when I had her, I remember I was so tempted. A friend was due to come over and meet her and see us. And I was so tempted to say, "Don't come over, I'm a mess." And then actually, you know, what I actually said was, come over, I'm a mess. And I think that was the difference between the first time and the third time was, you know, don't look at my vulnerability. Don't come over, I'm in a mess. I don't want you to see me like this. Everything's a state, I'm a state. And then that, you know, that third time was actually, I'm a state, everything's a state. I need you to come over. I need you just to step into this space and be with me and see me. And, you know, it makes me, there's so many, I told you I was hormonal. I told you this was going to be an emotional one. But there's so much in that as humans, we deserve connection. We deserve to be seen. And yeah, I think when we feel lonely, often that is what is not happening.
But it becomes this cycle, doesn't it? Because when I'm in that thing in the kitchen that you talked about, I'm like, why does nobody know how hard this is for me? It's because you have done such a good job at hiding how hard it is for you. Which in itself is difficult. You've added this difficult layer. Exactly that. Like with Greta, I was in my pajamas for a long time because, guys, I've just had a baby and I need you all to see that. And therefore, I'm not going to get up and make you a cup of tea because I've just had a baby. You can see it. I look like someone who's
You can make me one.
You can see, I'm in recovery. Yeah. Look at it. And yeah, and so we have to get comfortable with letting our own barriers down, and it's really difficult.
Yeah, because I think sometimes the times I've been most put together to the world have been the times when internally I am the least. And I, you know, I look back and I think looking like I have it together has been my defense against falling apart. 100%. You know, it's been my defense against nobody asked me if I'm actually okay, because I might break and I can't afford to break because I've got young children or I've got a baby or I've got a toddler, or, you know, I can't afford to break right now because I need to function. And I think it's again, it's those barriers that tell the world that we're okay. And I'm a real one for that. Like I often look really put together because I love makeup. I love, you know, I like getting dressed in the morning, even if I've got 5 minutes, even if it's been a hard morning, I'll step out and look like I've got it together. But the truth is often different. And it's hard, isn't it? Because you might present to the world in a way because you enjoy that or because it's a defense. And then, you know, people are so easily seduced by how you look on the outside is an indicator of how you are on the inside. I remember, again, one of those pertinent moments when I used to work in advertising, and I got pulled, you know, for appraisal. And they said, you know, Anna, if you just work this a little bit harder, you could be in line for a promotion. And I started crying, and they were just like, oh, okay, that's not what we were expecting. And the reality of it was, is that I'd been crying every morning on the way over the Waterloo Bridge, talking to my mum, every evening on the way home. I was so unhappy. I was just about kind of managing to do everything because I was such a perfectionist that how I presented to them was completely different to the reality. And I remember a colleague saying, Anna, if you're stressed, you need to look more stressed. Like, you need to look, you know, they won't believe that it's too much if you're not looking. And I just found that so hard because it's not in my nature. But that's vulnerability. And I think regardless of how we present to the world, whether it works for or against us, sometimes we need, it's a discipline. Vulnerability is a discipline. It's, I need to be open with people. I need to be having these conversations. I need to be pushing myself beyond the I'm fine or I'm okay or I'm just having a tough day. Just with two or three people, I would say to my clients, two or three people in your life, you know, base level, that need to know how you are.
But you're right, it's a reflex, because with the how are you, you know, the words have come out of your mouth of, oh yeah, I'm fine, or it's good, yeah, all right. You do it because that's what you do, and you have to actually give people the truthful answer. And provided they're the right people, that's never a burden, is it?
No. And when I was in my darkest time after having my middle child and going through all the postnatal depression, and my friends knew that I wasn't okay, but actually And I had some lovely friends, some lovely antenatal friends that I'd met first time round. So they really did care about me. But I found it so much easier to type my feelings into an online community. Mm. So I'd been added to a Facebook group after joining a baby center group or something. And I found it easier to type my feelings to that group of women that I hadn't mm-hmm. met before than to talk to my friends about it. And I think sometimes that has to be, you know, something is always better than nothing. And their compassionate and kind, supportive responses in time gave me the confidence to speak to those physically mm-hmm. in my life. So I think, you know, as long as it is happening, as long as you are finding those spaces or finding those, you know, ideally it would be people around you. But let's face it, some people literally don't have supportive mm. people in their lives at the moment. So where can you seek that, even if it's online, even if it's anonymous, so that you are adding value to your feelings and your experiences and allowing someone to revert with a kind and compassionate, supportive response?
Mm. You touched on that, you know, this idea of it taking a village, and it definitely does take a village. And because of the way we all live now, often people aren't close to their families or don't have that network, and it's really difficult, isn't it, to because you need to rely on people. And yeah, it's hard.
It's very hard, and it can come down to, so, you know, a lot of the therapy that I do with mothers is around, I haven't got that support network. Mm. And there are a few reasons for that. Sometimes it might be that you have people there, you just don't have the depth of that relationship there. Or it might be that you're fearful of being emotionally vulnerable because someone has misunderstood you or maybe even abused that vulnerability at some point in your life. So for you, that is a terrifying thing to do. You know, what if they don't understand me? What if they can't validate that? What if they twist that? What if, you know, and I think there are a few reasons as to why we can feel village-less. And it's often about, you know, therapy is amazing if that can be accessed. I've got a book called Know Your Worth, which can help with this if that's not something that is accessible for you. It's about growing in confidence and taking those small steps of vulnerability. And it might just, you know, testing the water, because you to hear your story and behind the scenes is a privilege that needs to be earned. Okay, we don't need to tell everyone everything, and we have a right to want to feel safe in doing so. So I tell people to take little risks to test it out. So it might be that you've got one friend who has historically been kind and supportive. I always say choose someone who has historically mm-hmm. been kind and supportive on whatever level. And just, you know, maybe they ask you if you're okay and you just say, you know what, I would normally say yes, but actually I'm going to say, I've had a really mm-hmm. tough morning, and see how mm-hmm. they respond. And maybe then next time take it that little bit further and see how they respond. So you're actually... you're testing the waters and kind of dipping your toe a little bit further in each time. And hopefully what will happen in time is that you'll find a couple of people who can handle it, who can be supportive. Mm.
As you're talking, I'm thinking it's slightly unrelated, but it does tie back. I think Lucy Sheridan, the comparison coach, when she's previously emailed me to ask for a favor for something. And at the end of that, she always says, and if you ever need anything in return, don't forget to ask me. I'm waiting to, you know, this is an IOU, you know, I owe you. And I just love that bit of language at the end, because then it makes me feel really comfortable whenever that might be, 6 months, a year down the line, to do that. And I think I'm sitting here thinking, well, I'm not in the early baby bit anymore, and I do feel kind of a bit more grounded than I have to be able to offer that up to the people that might not, because I think that's the task, isn't it? When to pull that out of other people to try and help them, and then in turn, hopefully, when you need it, you're able to do the same.
Yeah, and I think it's knowing that, you know, things do come in swings mm-hmm. and roundabouts, and sometimes you might feel really uncomfortable that you're allowing a friend to be there for you, but also verbalise that. Yeah. You know, I might say to a friend, you know, I want to talk about you, and she might say, no, Anna, we need to talk about you. And I'm like, oh gosh, I find it so uncomfortable. And she might say, well, it'll be my turn at some point. And sometimes, you know, it's just your time. Mm. And the way that the world works, it will be their time at some point. And it's just trusting that, yeah.
And I think also in that whole postpartum thing, it's a bit of a cliche, but I always remember people saying, oh, how can I help? And because your brain is gone and because you don't know, because you don't, I could never even verbalise that. Whereas if someone had a baby now, a close friend or a sibling, I would say, let me come over and bring you a meal. Let me come over and take your kids to the park. Again, it's that, that swings and roundabouts when you're able to be the one who can be there for someone, doing that in the most useful way possible, I suppose.
Yeah, and I think sometimes your yes please feels, you know, you might say that with your palm sweating and your heart racing, but that's a gesture to yourself that, and also a gesture to your children. Like when someone is offering support that you actually need and everything in you is wanting to say, no, thank you, I'm fine, don't worry about it. You know, again, what would it be like to verbalise that to your friends? Say, everything in me wants to say no, but I'm really challenging myself to say yes, please. So I'm going to say yes, please, but know that this is hard.
And I'm grateful.
And I'm so grateful. And I'd normally say no, but I want to say yes. And again, that just deepens that connection, because we, when we lean on each other, you know, it's enriching that relationship, and it's giving us that connection.
Yeah. Because all your best friends are the ones who you've, or for me, or the most important people in my life are the people who I've shared the most with, and they've seen me at my absolute worst, and then you get to celebrate in knowing each other at their best. I'm also thinking, trying to think of ways to help this. I know something that you and I really do, which I love, is that we're not in touch like day to day at all, but once in a while we voice note each other with utterly mental ramblings. But I think while a voice note isn't the same as seeing someone, it's so nice, that idea that someone's thought of you and that they're just sharing what's in their head, and it's so easy just to think of someone and then do nothing with it. But actually just saying, yeah, I saw this, I thought of you, hope you're well, just it's those little moments in a day that really do make you feel like you're seen, I suppose.
I think voice notes are wonderful, and I think it's so easy to overlook the small things, you know, but then it's that going back to something is always better than nothing. Like we got so fatigued by the digital connection over, you know, the pandemic, but we also have to admit that that was what kept us going at the same time, you know, because it was better than nothing. It might feel like, you know, a crisp when you want a full roast, you know, it's never fully feeding you what you're craving, but it's better than nothing. And I think voice notes are amazing because they have they're more nuanced than the messages. Like do you know what I mean? You're less likely to kind of get cross wires and interpret things differently, and it's the voice, and I think it's more conversational, and I love them because I can store them up and listen to them in the car, and it feels like, you know, it feels more like connection. And then when you actually do get to see each other, there's something already there. There's a knowingness there. And I think,
they're a bit of a gift, aren't they?
They're great. Yeah.
I'm conscious of time, but one thing you did tap in on with that digital connection, I know that's something that can be problematic, and for you and I, it's on a bigger scale, but people are, again, because they're seeing what I'm doing on social media, which is part of my job, they feel like they're in contact with me and that they're part of my lives. And they're like, oh yeah, you've been doing this for me. It's like, yeah, but we haven't had that connection between you and I. You've observed it. And that can feel really difficult. And yeah, as I say, it's our jobs, but that's happening often with all of anyone with their social presence. Yeah. And I think we have to remember, just because we've seen it on the internet doesn't mean that connection's happened for real.
Yes, and actually I remember a friend not ignoring my messages, but just not kind of replying to them. And I said, you know, what's gone, like, what's this about? We've been friends for so long. And she said, to be honest, Anna, I just see you every day on stories. I feel like I am connected with you. And I'm like, there is so much going on in my life right now that is not on there. You know, I think I was early pregnant, really struggling with just being incredibly, incredibly sick. And there was other stuff going on in my life that I wasn't sharing on there. You know, and it's just that illusion, isn't it? And I think it's sometimes we believe what we see. So we have to consciously remind ourselves that there's more there. There's more of a story there. So if you're watching a friend on Instagram, then, you know, don't let that be your connection, because there is more of a story that they will be happy to share with you.
Yeah. And actually, my mum sometimes is like, oh, I'm just waiting for you to put another picture on Instagram, Chloe. I'm like, mum, Just ask me whatever picture you want.
Yeah, I'll send you some pictures. Have them all. I'll send you a load of them.
Don't wait for Instagram. Yeah. definitely not. And again, there's a whole part of my life that it's the same vulnerability that I do reserve for those people, and I want to share with them. And that isn't that Instagram is an illusion. It's just because it's different versions of my life and the filtering.
Yeah. Definitely.
So two questions before you have to nip off. What do you have to shout about? Your new book?
Yes, The Little Book of Calm. So it's called For New Mums, but actually the overwhelming feedback is that there's stuff in there for all mums, and it's not a front to back book. You just literally pick an emotion. There's a whole list of emotions at the front, from boredom, resentment, anger, loneliness, it's just so many, touched out, and you just flip to that page and there's just a few words there to ground and encourage and just untangle or reframe that emotion a little bit. So that's what
it is. And
it's
funny, you say it's not a front to back book, but it's the sort of book that then does draw you in. You're like, oh yes, you've nailed it. I'll go on to the next one and then the next one.
Yeah, I hope so. Really, I want it to be that book that feels like these are the words that you need to hear. These, you know, in those moments of loneliness, and there's loneliness in so many of the feelings because you feel alone in them. You know, just having some words to help you realize that you're not alone in that. Like, it's common enough for me to have written it down in a book, and just to help reframe it and take the shame out of it and bring some compassion into it.
It's fantastic, as all your books are. And last question, if you could have an honest conversation with one person, who would it be and what would you say?
Oh, goodness me. Well, this is hard, isn't it? And I should have seen this one coming. Yes.
Who would it be?
So Brené Brown springs to mind. I mean, just because I devour all of her stuff, but I'm not even sure what that honest conversation would be, because she literally shares so much. She, you know, she's the queen of vulnerability. She shares, but I think I'd just quite like to be in her presence
and absorb it.
Yeah.
Oh yeah. I hope it wouldn't be a case of meeting your heroes and then it should be great. She'd be really great.
She'd be great, yeah.
It wouldn't be an honest conversation other than to say, I love you. And the word,
I love
the work that you do. What a queen that she is for being the guiding light on it all.
Oh, that Power of Vulnerability TED Talk. I remember listening to that, walking around Tooting Common in a really dark place. And that was, you know, that was a catalyst for change that has changed the rest of my life.
I completely agree. She just articulates the call to courage that is vulnerability. You're just like, oh, you've just kind of made me feel better about my entire existence and the way I process the world.
Yes. If it was a weakness, it wouldn't be so hard. It's bravery. And this is connection. This is what inspires connection. And this is the antidote to loneliness.
So Brené, there we go. What a one to end on. Thank you, Anna. For a gorgeous, gorgeous chat. And let's do that thing where we actually see each other in real life.
Yes, we will. Let's make that happen.
Okay. Yeah. Have a brilliant rest of your day. Thank you so much. Well, is it the irony or the pleasing thing about a conversation like that with Anna is that it inherently makes me feel less lonely, because I look at Anna and the work that she does, and as she says, how beautifully groomed she is, and you think, that girl's got it together. She's got a great support network. How could she ever feel lonely? Or how could she ever be crying on the doorstep to her husband? But rest assured, most people, if not everyone, has these moments. And that knowledge in and of itself is enough to tip the balance for me, so that when I am spiralling in loneliness and potential resentment, to stop myself and hopefully to do the brave thing and just let someone know that it isn't going as well as perhaps you're making it appear. So that's that. Thank you so much for listening. It's been another episode of But Why. I'm always, always interested to hear what you think, to know if you two have ever felt lonely. Please do get in touch on at But Why Insta or But Why at Clemmie Telford. I'd look forward to hearing from you. I am now off to change all the beds and shovel the stuff in the car. We're selling the house. We've had the photos taken, but we've got the first lot of viewings happening, and that means basically trying to declutter our lives and make it look a bit more appealing. So I'm off to do that. Have a good day. Speak to you next week. Bye-bye.